censorship chaos at the world's largest mainstream video distribution center, causing problems for VT Radio. And we're going to discuss Al Nakba, the catastrophe, or as some people call it, birth of Israel, with VT's senior editor, Dr. Kevin Barrett, right here, right now, on
VT Radio. Let's go. With host Johnny Punish.
Okay, and we're on VT Radio, back with Dr. Kevin Barrett, VT senior editor. Wow, so much to talk about this week. Dr. Kevin Barrett, how you doing today?
Always good to be back, John. Yeah, I've had a crazy last couple of weeks, and it's still pretty crazy, but it feels a little bit normal now that I'm back with you.
Good, good. Yeah. You know, I want to talk about the Palestinian Al-Nakba. It's been 75 years since the Al-Nakba, which is the catastrophe, or as Israelis call it, the birth of their nation. I want to talk about that. But before we talk about that, I want to talk to all the VT radio viewers out there and explain censorship. We just got censored again on the main video channel. I don't want to mention them, but you know who they are. And it's about the sea issue. About, I'm going to put a picture of what that is on here, so we talk about that. But here's the thing, VT Radio listeners. We can't talk about certain subjects on the main video channel that everybody in the world uses. One of them is the election of 2020, and the other one is the C word. For those of you know what I'm talking about, again, I'll flash the picture of that so you know what I'm talking about. But Kevin, here's what I got to do. I have to go back and review all of our videos, because we can do an hour-long video, and if we mention that C word just once on some unsuspecting conversation for 30 seconds, they're removing our video. They're taking action to remove it. But more importantly, they're giving us strikes. So we already have two strikes against us, and third one is they cancel our account. So this is actually an emergency on that channel. I'll be reviewing every single video. It's a real pain in the ass for me. And here's what I'm going to do. Now, we're going to use a policy on VT Radio. We're going to use Rumble, of course, for all our future posts. Only we'll use the other one, the main one, only when we have to, because we're just not going to support that anymore. But I'm going to go back and edit those videos out for those 30 seconds. I'm going to put a note on it, a disclaimer to all the viewers, and say, okay, this has been censored, so they know, and I'm going to put a little note to go to our Rumble page to see the full video. What do you think about that? Is that the right action for you? Are you okay with that?
Absolutely, yeah. That's actually kind of what I've been doing. My main YouTube channel got nuked, when was that, like a couple of years ago, for ostensibly the same reasons. That is, that there was discussion about the evil C word. Right. And also about the elections. I don't know if we should even mention the particular year.
Right.
Anywhere near when we say the word elections, because right, their AI stormtroopers will come after us.
Right.
But yeah, so that's what I do now too, is I just post on Rumble and sometimes BitChute as my main platform. And then I put up some like stuff that I'm pretty sure they're not going to come after me for on my, what used to be my backup YouTube channel, which has a relatively small number of subscribers, just a few thousand. Right. And so, yeah, that's I guess what you have to do. But frankly, it's completely outrageous. And, you know, it's one reason that we don't really have a country anymore, as far as I'm concerned, that the freedom of speech, which has been respected more in the observance than the breach. I mean, so many things in the U.S. are, you know, hypocritical, and the reality doesn't live up to the theory. But we've done okay overall, in most respects, most of the time, with the free speech issue, the First Amendment. Jurisprudence is really one of the great things about American history, but that's all gone now. You know, since 9/11 and since that whatever happened with around that C word in particular, although it started even, I think, with 2016, when Trump was elected, things that was right in that time frame that it started to really accelerate. And now we really don't have any free speech ethos left anymore. And the these monopolies, like the evil big video channel you're talking about, are completely suppressing any kind of honest discussion about a lot of things, especially focusing on those two issues that you mentioned. And they just ban you without any real explanation, without any appeal. And it's, I mean, I think it's really, we need a violent revolution against these people. And I'm not going to go into the details of that, or they'll probably ban me for saying that.
I also want to say that they don't allow VT Radio to make any revenue from their Google money thing. You know, they're how they pay with their advertising. They usually pay those channels that have content. They fund them with money. So that's the advertising thing, right? VT gets nothing. Completely banned. It has been banned for many years.
Yeah, I've never got a penny from them either.
Yeah, they just ban, and but they're using it to make money off us. So they make money, but we don't. And it's actually a criminal enterprise, as far as I'm concerned. They're stealing.
Did you ever see that article I did, that parody where I had Nassim Akdam speaks for me? I got all these T-shirt fashion models and photoshopped it so they're all wearing these T-shirts that say Nassim Akdam speaks for me. You may recall she was the Persian lady who made a living as a blank blanker on the world's biggest video internet channel.
Right.
And then she was basically doing anti-Iran propaganda, and they loved her and they boosted her and she made decent money. And then she kind of had a change of heart and she started criticizing the United States. And the next thing you know, they had shadow banned her and downgraded her and destroyed her ability to make a living. So then the next thing you know is she's at YouTube headquarters shooting.
Oh, really?
So she's the YouTube shooter. Yeah, she didn't hurt anybody, but the security guard shot her dead. So I think she's a martyr at the highest part of Jannah or paradise right now. She's a great martyr, and Nassim Akdam speaks for me.
Wow.
And of course, that's
I haven't seen that. I'm definitely look that one up. Well, yeah, so censorship is alive and well. It's absolutely horrible. It's something that we fight at VT and VT Radio all the time. It's like fighting up a hill as they're throwing rocks at you all day long. It's like a dodgeball thing, you know, dodge this, dodge that, edit that out. You know, we don't want to censor anything. And I certainly won't censor. We post our stuff on Rumble, and Rumble is 100% uncensored. So far, they haven't come after us. Do you think anytime in the future Rumble will change to become an evil empire?
A lot of people are suspicious, you know. There are so many of these sort of bait and switches. The internet as itself was a bait and switch. You know, they lured everybody onto the internet first, saying it'll never be commercialized. And so we all said, yay, it's going to be paradise. Everybody's going to be sharing all of their information. Information wants to be free. And boom, then the bait and switch kicks in, and these greed heads commercialized it and destroyed it, made it vastly worse than it was. And then likewise with social media. Social media came in promising total free speech. Everybody gets to speak their mind. And then the basic rule of the road of the internet was equality. That is, they're not allowed to favor anybody. Net neutrality. So all viewpoints are presented equally. Viewpoint neutral. It was considered absolutely unthinkable that anybody's viewpoint whatsoever would ever be treated any differently than anybody else's viewpoint. They'd all be promoted equally, or if they were illegal, then they could be suppressed equally by the authorities. But it's not the business of the people running the internet, which is just the public square. It's Trafalgar Square, a free speech zone, for them to be inviting in the authorities, surveilling anything. It's just like the phone company. The internet is just a telephone. And everybody agreed on this until only about 2015 or so, when suddenly there was an orchestrated effort to change it. But up until 2015, the internet was supposed to be just a big telephone and the phone company has no right to surveil you. Of course, that got rolled back earlier than 2015, but the phone company isn't supposed to listen to your conversations. Anybody surveils you or spies on you in any way, shape, or form is committing a crime, and that crime is called wiretapping, and that's illegal in every state. It's also a federal offense. So every time they look at what you're doing online and try to sell you stuff, whoever did that is committing felony wiretapping and ought to be in prison. And likewise, the phone company is not allowed to favor the viewpoints of one user over another. If you want to call up your friend on the phone and say something that the phone company doesn't like, they have no right whatsoever to mess with your phone call, to cut you off, to prohibit you, to treat your phone call any differently from anybody else's phone call saying things that they do like. So the internet and everybody who runs the infrastructure of the internet, they're just a big phone company. They have no right to spy. They have no right to censor. These people, really, again, we need a revolution, and they need to be dealt with.
I agree 100%. On that note, I'm going to segue right into the Palestinian al-Nakba, or as Israel calls it, the birth of their nation. Back in 1948, 75 years ago this month, There was a war and where they kicked out about 1 million Palestinians out of the country to create their nation. Can you speak to that issue real quick, Kevin? Tell us about that more, please.
Yeah. I just did an article this week for American Free Press, which as we record this hasn't yet been published, but it will be up at my Substack soon, which is kevinbarrett.substack.com. And it's called The Palestinians' Catastrophe is Our Catastrophe Too. And I began by just summarizing the Nakba and mentioning the experience of Jaffa Ramini, who is a Nakba survivor. Now, I mentioned that the Nakba could be described as the Palestinian Holocaust. The word Holocaust has, you know, been taken from scripture and applied to the dispossession of much of European Jewry during World War II. And something very similar happened in Palestine in 1948 and thereafter. And then you could also call it a genocide. Francis Boyle, the international law professor at University of Illinois, has written a terrific paper making really the inarguable point that this match at what's been done to the Palestinians perfectly fits the international legal definition of genocide. So this is a Holocaust. This is a genocide. And I had Jaffa Ramini on my show. He's 80 years old. He was 5 years old when this happened. And what happened was he was in forgetting which town it was. Maybe I could pull that up here. Let me see if I
go ahead.
I can't seem to find it. Anyway, okay. he got surrounded. Yeah, the Zionists were coming. They had been committing these massacres. Dariusin is the most famous one, but there were a great many more where they would come in and just attack a village, surround it, and then come in and massacre anybody they could find, including women and children, often banning them to death and sometimes committing mass rapes and so on before they did that. In Dariusin, of course, there were some survivors that they marched into Jerusalem and then they just lined up all these civilians and shot them. So this sort of thing was going on. The Zionists were dropping leaflets saying, leave or die. And when a wave of refugees from these atrocities showed up in his town, Jafar's family had to flee. And as they fled, they were bombed and strafed from the air. They were shot at. He was hiding in a cave at one point when a bullet went through the head of the kid next to him. Horrible experiences. And anyway, he and so many other Palestinians, the vast majority, it's often estimated about 800,000. You add that to as many as 100,000 or more killed, and we're close to 1 million people that were eliminated, the vast majority of the population of Palestine. So that happened in 1948, and we just observed the 75th anniversary. So in my article, I point out that this catastrophe for the Palestinians when they lost their country is obviously much worse than anything that we can say happened to us. But the United States, you know, we may have lost our country to the Zionists too. And we've suffered a catastrophe from Zionism as well. The Zionists hijacked our country starting out under Truman. He was given $2 million in a suitcase, according to a story JFK told to Gore Vidal. Cash, $2 million of cash in a suitcase to support the birth of Israel. And that kind of corruption has gotten out of control, pushed by the Zionists. And in the article, I cover some of the highlights or lowlights of what the Zionists have done to America, including the murders of the Kennedy brothers and, of course, 9/11 most recently. And the cost of Israel to the United States was estimated, I think it was $1.7 trillion. And this was the Christian Science Monitor in 2002 making that estimate. Well, since then, the 9/11 wars, which are really disguised wars for Israel, triggered by Israel destruction of the Trade Center, murder of 3,000 Americans, those wars have cost another $7 trillion. So we're sort of in the double-digit trillions, apparently, that Israel has cost us monetarily. But more importantly, our republic and our way of governance has been damaged by this extreme corruption in so many different ways. And one is these coups d'etat. The Zionists have not only murdered presidents and would-be presidents, but also they have arranged for presidents to leave office early if they don't like what, say, Jimmy Carter is a threat because he's pushing for a peace deal that they don't want. They make sure he's a one-term president. They did the same thing to H.W. Bush. It's bipartisan. H.W. Bush wouldn't play ball 100% with the Zionists. He only 95%. So they made sure he was a one-term president. Bill Clinton, same thing. He wants a peace deal before he leaves office. The Zionists won't give up what they would have to give up to have a fair peace deal. So they cripple Clinton politically by sending Monica Lewinsky. And on and on and on. I could go on all day talking about this. So the Zionists have totally corrupted our system, cost us double-digit trillions of dollars, wrecked our economy, utterly destroyed our Constitution. That censorship that we just started talking about is spearheaded by the Zionists. In, you know, yeah, right now, the issues they'll get you on that evil video channel that we must not mention are the C word and the election word. So that's what they, you know, that's the pretext. But the larger censorship effort has always been pushed around the Zionists. If you look at the university professors, including me, who've been pushed out of universities, the vast majority have been pushed out by Zionists for one reason or another. And the likewise, this internet censorship effort is all pushed by Zionists who are afraid, oh my God, Trump is a white nationalist Nazi, yada, yada, yada. That's how it all really got started. But of course, what you could see was really going on was that they were losing control of a lot of narratives, including the Big H narrative, another word I won't mention, and of course, the 9/11 narrative, the most important of all. And so because the Zionists were losing control of narratives, they decided, well, we can't go with this libertarian internet model anymore. We need to go to a kind of a Gestapo model, which they've moved to. So again, this you know, the American system has just been totally undermined and corrupted by the Zionists to the point that I feel, you know, I feel like I've lost my country and I'm leaving. This is no longer the United States of America. I can't talk in the de facto public square anymore. I'm surrounded by lunatics and morons who are brainwashed to believe the most insane things. And the driving force here is Zionists and fellow travelers of the Zionists. So Israel has destroyed the United States, not quite as brutally as it's destroyed Palestine. But just wait, you know, things might get pretty brutal here too.
Yeah, I'm going to tell my own Palestinian story. As some of you VTU readers know, I am a Palestinian in the diaspora. My mother, Marcel Tawil, was born in Haifa, Palestine, 1939, and she's a victim of al-Nakba. Her whole family, my grandfather, my grandmother. My grandfather was a taxi cab driver in Haifa in the 30s and the 40s, and they had 8 children. And here's my little story. In 1948, the Zionists came to the house and threatened the family. If they don't get out, they're going to kill all of them. So our family ran away thinking that for 3 days they'd go out of the house and then they'd come back home. And this is a typical story for all Palestinians. And they ran away to the north of Haifa to a place called Tyre, or, you know, T-Y-R-E in Lebanon. And while they were there, my uncle, his current name is Joseph Tawil, he was born in Tyre as a refugee as they crossed the border. He was actually born right there because she was 9 months pregnant. And his original name was Robert. They called him Robert when he was born. But what happened was they got word that same day that a famous soccer player, they call it soccer, over there they call it football, was killed in Palestine by the Zionists. He was my uncle to my grandmother. His name was Joseph Tawil. So they changed his name from Robert to Joseph to honor him, a fallen a Palestinian that was felled by the Zionists. We lost everything. My mom was a refugee in Lebanon for over 12 years in Beirut. And if anybody knows how that works out, Lebanese looked down on the Palestinians in those days. It was you kind of look down on all those poor Palestinians. They lost everything. They're the second-class citizens. So, yeah, everything was stolen by the European colonists. To this day, that's true in Haifa. And my mom, I didn't even know I was Palestinian until I was 18 years old, because when my mom came to America and she got in there because my grandmother happened to be born in Brazil in a time where they imported Palestinian workers to work in the mines in Brazil. And my grandmother happened to be born in Brazil in the year 1915. So when they went to the American embassy to go from Lebanon to United States, they said, no, you're Palestinian. She said, oh, I'm not. I'm Brazilian. And she pulled out her Brazilian passport, and all her kids were able to go to America. And my mom would always say she was Lebanese, because in America, it wasn't polite or it wasn't a good idea to tell people you're Palestinian in those days, you know? It was looked down upon big time. So I always thought we were Lebanese, but we were never Lebanese, never. Our family comes from Haifa for 1,000 years. We look back even into the days when Napoleon tried to take it over in the 1800s, all the way to the creation of Haifa in 1750s. And of course, Acre, which is pronounced in American English, Acre, I think they say, Acre, A-C-R-E. It's called Acre in Arabic. But yeah, our family comes from Palestine. And we have over 1,000 years there, but we don't anymore. And that's our El Nakba story personally. And yes, I'm angry about it. Yes, I will remain angry to the day I die. I'm in the diaspora. I should be in Haifa, but I'm not. My mom is Palestinian. She's not an American. And yeah, that's life. You know, what are you going to do? I do sometimes, you can hear my music. If you look up Johnny Punish, you'll hear a song called We Exist, which was about Palestinians, that we do exist. We're not invisible. And The Occupation, which is a song about, obviously, the occupation. And some of my more famous ones are Stone Throw and Riot by Twisted Nixon. That was my original punk band. And so I've done a lot of songs about that. It's only catharticism to express the frustration. You know what I mean, Kevin? It just it's to make it clear to Americans who are listening to this, it's analogous to the American Indian, the American Native person. You know, they were obliterated. You know, completely obliterated and taken over by European colonists. And that's exactly what happened in Palestine. Today, those are European colonists with some Russians, okay? And it is what it is. It's 75 years later. What are we supposed to do about it, Kevin? What say you?
Well, you know, I just quickly pulled up this news that broke. I saw it last night that, you know, we're speaking of censorship earlier and how the Zionists are leading the charge on censorship. And the latest story of Zionist censorship, because they don't want you to say this. And probably part of the reason that they're giving extra scrutiny to VT and to you is because of this, because they know you're Palestinian and VT has traditionally taken a pro-Palestinian anti-Zionist position. But the latest story I saw was that this very famous song, Palestinian Blood, or Dum Palestini, or Dum Filistini by Mohammed Assef, has been banned from Spotify and apparently other streaming services. And so that was the latest. Now, the excuse given was they claim that its lyrics are anti-Semitic. So I pulled up the lyrics, and you know, you can translate easily.
Here we go again.
Yeah, Google Translate. So what was the anti-Semitic content of the lyrics? Turns out that there's like nothing remotely bigoted, or really there's no reference even to the Zionists in the lyrics. It's just it's a proud patriotic Palestinian song. I have Palestinian blood, and I will, you know, I mean, the only controversial thing is it's, you know, I have Palestinian blood and I'm willing to shed it for my homeland or something like that. So yeah, he's willing to, you know, defend his country. So any song where you're saying you're going to defend your country, I guess every other country on earth is allowed to do that, right? I mean, the Star Spangled Banner is about, you know, a war, the Revolutionary War, to defend the United States and so on and so forth. But if you're Palestinian, even one little mention in a very proud patriotic song, one little mention that you'd be willing to shed your blood to defend your homeland makes it, quote unquote, anti-Semitic. So, you know, another example of how, you know, the Zionists are the spear tip of the whole censorship thing. I mean, they censor so outrageously. And, you know, there have been a lot of similar cases to this on things like Facebook and other big social media outlets, Facebook in particular, I guess, with Zuckerberg being a friend of Netanyahu. So it's completely maddening. So you can't even say you love Palestine and, you know, and you'll defend Palestine or you're an anti-Semite.
Unbelievable. You know, this is such a long, long history going back to let's go to World War One. I mean, going back, the Zionists pre-World War One were actually talking to the Ottoman Empire about getting their Jewish homeland from the Ottoman Empire, and they were offered Uganda. This is in, of course, Judenstadt, written by Theodor Herzl. But when World War One came around, they'd made a deal with Lord Balfour, right, of England, and part of the deal was help us get the Americans into World War One, and we'll reward you with with Reward You with Palestine. That was the Balfour Declaration of 1917, I believe. Yeah. I think November 2nd, 1917. I'll have to look that date up, but I think it's November 2nd. Of course, that was the major beginnings of the Zionists taking control of the U.S. Congress and paying off people. And that's kind of the mark that I see where it all started. Now, before that, Zionist influence was already in America, but it wasn't to that extent. But when it got to World War One and they wanted their homeland somewhere, which was written by Judenstadt, the idea that they weren't getting along in Europe, they need their own space, right? That was the idea of Judenstadt, right? Jewish state, right? So that was the beginning of the end of America. It's all the way to Truman getting his $2 million, getting paid off, all the congressmen getting bribed, or if you don't take their bribe, donation or whatever they want to call it now, then they just they fund the other guy to just oust you. You know, that's happened to so many congressmen that have actually spoken against this terrorist group, I call them. Is this the end of America? Is that what's going on here?
You're right to take us back to World War One and Balfour and bringing the U.S. into World War One in exchange for Palestine. That's right. And then we could even go a little bit back before that to 1913 when the Federal Reserve was created to set the stage for this bringing the U.S. into World War One. There was a kind of an orchestrated coup at that time to bring in this cartel of private bankers to usurp the Treasury's right under the Constitution to create currency. So, we saw that kind of century of Zionism beginning, I think, with the creation of the Fed and with World War One. So, again, this is why the Palestinian catastrophe is America's catastrophe, too. And I actually did include that in my article. I forgot to go that far back, but you made a good point. You really need to.
Yeah, so it's been a long-standing, almost over 100 years now of methodically destroying the United States and turning it into a pro-Zionist state. It wasn't like that way before then, right? That did not exist, but they really took it over big time. And I've said this on radio before. I've said this on many channels. I've been interviewed many times as a music artist on other radio channels pre-internet. WBAI comes to mind in New York City. I was interviewed in 2001 about this, and I said Zionism is a small organization of people who has the greatest influence around the world. They are, as an organization, super effective. I'm not talking the morality or anything like that, but they control so much as such a small group of people. It's incredible, actually, what they've done. What say you about that?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Now, whether they'll be able to keep control of their narrative and of occupied Palestine in the future is another question. As I discussed with Jafar Rahimi on my radio show, that it's unlikely, or at least it's not all that sure of a thing that there's going to be an Israel when the 100th anniversary of the Nakba rolls around, another 25 years. It seems to be falling apart from within to a certain extent, as you have this high birth rate among the Arab Jews, the Arab Jewish immigrants, who have been kind of co-opted into a radical extremist Zionist ideology. And the more quote-unquote liberal element, which is really just better at putting on a PR disguise on their genocide project, which would be the Ashkenazi European invaders, the ones who set the whole thing up in the first place, their birth rate is much lower. And so there's been this gradual trend towards more and more extremism. And that is ruining their PR worldwide, and especially in the key Western countries. So as even American liberal Jews are turning against Zionism in Israel, younger generations even more than the older generations. And we also see the U.S. losing its influence. And of course, the U.S. has been propping up Israel. So the combination of all of these things, as Israel changes and becomes a more radical country, a less wealthy, affluent, educated European-style country, and its PR efforts are ruined, and it loses support in the West, and the Western influence diminishes, I don't think Israel is going to pick up support in the East. You know, a lot of people say, well, Israel is, you know, conspiring against America, and they're on board with the rise of the BRICS and the new world, the multipolar world, the world with Russia and China. They're getting their hooks in China. They're getting their hooks in Russia. I don't think so. I don't think they have their hooks in those countries nearly to the extent they do in the West. And so the decline of the West, as well as the decline of the support for Zionism in the Jewish diaspora, I think all of this dooms Israel. And so I don't think there will be a Jewish state there in 50 years and very likely not in 25.
So you don't think they're going to switch from bribing the United States government to bribing China and Russia? You don't think that's possible? You think they're going to make an attempt to it?
Well, they'll try it. But the power struggle that's going on right now is really the Zionist bankster-controlled West versus these other countries where they don't have that as much influence. Yeah, they have some influence in Russia. You know, organized crime there, just like here, is a Zionist enterprise. And so, you know, Putin isn't going to go out of his way to cause trouble for these, Zionists in Russia and in Israel. On the other hand, Putin did cause trouble for them when he helped Iran save Syria from this regime change attempt. So as we see in that example, where the Americans totally lined up with destroy Syria for Israel and the Russians lined up on the other side, Russia is not as heavily controlled by the Zionists. Russia has an age-old relationship with Jews, and they have that experience with Jews, and they, you know, they have managed to coexist, as Solzhenitsyn wrote in his famous book about that, which was, what was it, like 500 years together or something like that. I forget how many centuries it was. But in any case, the Zionist influence in Russia is considerably less than in the United States. They just totally dominate the United States. I mean, can you imagine in Russia, like if Netanyahu went to Russia and talked against Putin and then went in front of the Duma, and can you imagine them all just like jumping to their feet every 10 seconds to give him a prolonged standing ovation? I don't think so.
I think they'd get a rope and tie his legs up and drag him out, wouldn't they?
I would hope so. Yeah. But in China, likewise, China doesn't particularly care for the Western oligarchs, the banksters, and the Zionists. I mean, those are the people that did the Opium Wars, after all. And, you know, China's whole history is about regaining their independence and strength after that horrible period that was inflicted on them by the Zionist-run British Empire and then the American Empire. So I don't think China really has any use for Israel particularly. Yeah, they'll play power politics and do what they have to do to get by in the world and stuff. But when push comes to shove, when again, the Western and especially U.S. Influence and support for Israel disappears, is China going to step into the gap and prop up Israel against the wishes of all the people in that region? I don't think so. I mean, look what China's just, they just brokered peace between Saudi Arabia and Iran, which is giving Israel fits. Israel didn't want that. Were they able to stop China from doing that? Of course not. So, no, I think Israel is out of control now. I think the leadership in Israel is no longer competent. They used to be really nasty, but they were pretty competent. And now, not so much. So, yeah, I think they're heading on a trajectory that's just completely unsustainable.
Now, the economies of the world ranked are China, in 20 years, is going to be China number one, number two, India, and number three, the United States. Currently, it's the United States with the higher GDP, but all economists around the world say that's not going to happen in 20 years. Now, India is a player. They're going to be a player in global politics, looks like, because their economy is going to be a huge economy, is moving up the ladder. Now, currently, as far as I understand it, the leadership of India can be bribed by the Zionists. Is that correct?
Yeah, at this point they can. And that's partly because of the relative wealth, because the Zionists still have this privileged position in the wealthiest and most powerful part of the world, the West and the United States. So they're in a position to bribe India. But once India has more wealth than the West and the United States, I don't think they'll be in that position anymore. But yeah, you're right. The Zionists have their hooks in India at this point. And you know, who knows how long that will last. But
yeah, so yeah, I'm just wondering, a China-India versus the United States down the road, you know, the U.S. is going to hold on to Zionism as long as they can, right? I mean, they're going to go all the way for it. I think they're going to go all the way with it. But I think a China-India leadership of the global world, the pushback will just be amazing. And Israel will be stuck with dealing with the fact that they are occupying an indigenous peoples, and they have no respect for everybody else except themselves, you know? So I think that might be the end of Israel, but I'm not 100% sure. What say you about that?
Yeah, well, like I said, as the Western sponsorship of Israel declines for various reasons, including the West's loss of power and the loss of sympathy for Israel in the West, especially among the Jewish diaspora in the West, I don't see anybody stepping in. I don't think Israel has the ability to make India or China suddenly the kind of all-out gung-ho supporter of Zionism that the U.S. has been.
I want to talk about religion real quick, because if we go that way, and that's the way the world's moving, I think, I am definitely not a bigot, and I want to make sure that everybody has the right to freedom of religion. That's just my personal choice. I don't want to see anybody Jewish or Christian or Muslim or pagan or anybody else be oppressed by the faith they choose. Do you think we can live in a future world where religion is respected worldwide, or are we going to have a problem with that going forward? I don't want to see another, we don't like Jewish people, or we don't like Muslim people, or we don't like Christian people, or whatever that may be. What say you about that?
Yeah, I think the real issue is the war on traditional religion by fanatical secularist elites, and maybe Satanists too, if you want to get a little bit conspiratorial about it, or occultists. 9/11 was not only designed to launch a war on Islam. I mean, the reason they went after Islam, I think, was that Islam is the last traditional religion standing. That is, the others have been undermined. The Vatican is full of Freemasons. Judaism has lost its hold on most Jewish people. The majority of Jews, especially the wealthier, powerful, more educated ones, are all atheists and secular people. The other religions likewise have diminished in their importance. So I think 9/11 was designed to go after religion by going after Islam. And we did see this rash of atheistic propaganda post 9/11 with, all of the new atheists suddenly appeared on the bestseller list. I think that was all orchestrated. So I think that what we really have to be concerned about is the destruction of religion and spirituality by, on the one hand, atheist materialists who actually believe that philosophy, which really is a 19th century philosophy, it's been outmoded for more than a century, even, based on scientific evidence. And then we also have the satanic or esoteric anti-traditional religion side of things too. Those are, of course, people who, religion tells us to submit to God. Islam means submission, but all religions teach that, really, the traditional ones anyway. And the satanic attitude is to rebel against the God and God's natural order. And the reality is that materialism is false. We live in a world that is based on consciousness. That is, consciousness is the core reality, and matter, space, and time are just epiphenomena. It just looks like we're living in a material world around the space and time, but actually that's a reflection of a deeper reality that's happening at a different non-material level, a level of consciousness. And even quantum physics now knows that consciousness essentially plays a role in manifesting reality. So the esoteric satanic side wants to use what we might call black magic, or in other words, to use the ability to get things done psychically, through various psychic powers. They want to, use that in service to greed, ego, the lust for power, all this sort of thing. What they want is power. And that satanic quest for power is one big part of the overthrow of traditional religion in the modern world. And of course, René Guénon saw all this coming and is the key guy to go to ask about it. So yeah, I think that's the issue that we see in the future. It's not like we're likely to see, suddenly the Muslims will take over and oppress all the non-Muslims. In fact, Islam has a pretty good track record of protecting other religions. It's got a built-in space for minority religions. And certainly I don't think Christianity, the biggest religion, is likewise either going to be running around forcing everybody to convert. certainly not Judaism. Most Jews, again, don't even believe in their own religion. So it's, we don't have a problem really with religious persecution of other religions by this or that religion. Yeah, there are idiots who are fighting, but that's a minor. The real big problem is the war on all traditional religion by the satanic, esoteric people, and then their atheist, materialistic dupes.
On that note, Kevin, I want to thank you again for enlightening us, as always, to the very difficult subjects of foreign policy. It's always a pleasure to speak to you and get your perspectives. And I know our listeners and our readers around the world really, really appreciate it. Can you tell us how the readers around the world and listeners can support what you're doing?
Yeah, you can go to my Substack, which is kevinbarrett.substack.com, and subscribe, get early access to my work, radio shows, and stuff that's paywalled elsewhere. And then also my website is truthjihad.com. And I accept PayPal donations to truthjihad@gmail.com.
Perfect. Okay. And tell us what you're working on this week. What's happening with you this week? Where are we going? What's going on around the world?
Well, as I mentioned, I'm publishing that piece on the Palestinians' catastrophes, our catastrophe too. And I'm going to be interviewing Daniel Pinchbeck. In fact, in less than 10 minutes, I have to get in touch with him. Do you know who he is?
No, I don't.
Yeah, he's a best-selling author. He was on the New York Times bestseller list with his book on Quetzalcoatl and the end of the world in 2012. He's one of these categorized sort of as a new age thinker. But he's one of the people who understand some of the stuff I was talking about in terms of the role of consciousness in the constitution of reality, that consciousness is the base reality, and that there are all of these religious and esoteric schools that actually have been describing reality. They're not just these myths that have been cleared up by materialistic science. The reality is quite the opposite. So he gets that, and he's a pretty decent thinker and writer on some of these topics. I don't agree with him about everything, but I'm excited to be interviewing him again.
Fantastic. On that note, let me tell you what I'm doing this week. I'll be editing and dealing with all the censorship issues that we discussed earlier. I'm actually remixing a copy of my song, The Occupation, because when I created the song, I think it was 12 years ago, I wasn't as good a mixer as I am today. I've gotten a lot better since then. So I'm going to make a new version of it and do that this week and get it out to the greater world that's interested in this subject. I'll send you a copy. I'll send you an email of the MP3. All right, Kevin?
Sounds good. Can't wait to hear it, John.
Yeah, because I know you love music, so I'm definitely going to send that to you. Okay, you have a terrific day and a fantastic week. And all you VT listeners and radio people out there, don't forget to support VT Radio. BuyMeACupOfCoffee.com. It's on our website. Please donate a one-time fee if you can. If not, become a member if you can. That'll be a huge help. As you can see, Kevin and I both need your support. We're censored all over the place. Anything you can do to help would be a great help to both of us. So please support Kevin and support VT. Thank you very much, and I'll talk to you soon, Kevin.
Okay. Take care.
If you enjoyed this presentation, hit the like button now. Also, share it with your friends. And don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss an episode.
VT approves this message.